The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
It's just another wonderful day in America. How did your day begin? Maybe, just maybe, you went to a high school graduation in New Orleans. Because, you know, it is that time of year. It's high school graduation time.
And that's right, Liz. We are covering a shooting that unfolded here on Xavier's campus. I'm going to step out of the way so you can see the scene there behind me. Now, witnesses tell Fox 8 that Morse Jeff High School graduation had just ended here at the Convention Center on Xavier's campus. Everyone had come outside. They say they were taking pictures. They were celebrating. And they tell Fox 8 there was some type of fight that broke out there in the parking lot. Moments later, they say gunfire erupted. I asked them how many shots they heard. I kind of got different answers on that. Some people said 5 or 6. Others said 10, 12 shots. But they said it sounded at first like balloons that were popping. And then next thing you know, everybody realized it was gunfire and started running. You can imagine the chaos that erupted. Now, police tell Fox 8 3 people were hit with gunfire. Witnesses tell us that one of those victims was an older woman who had just come to the graduation, kind of got caught in the gunfire, according to those witnesses. NOPD has not confirmed any of that information, and we do not know her condition or the condition of the other victims. Police also tell us that one person is in custody. This investigation is still very much ongoing. You can see police officers still here on the scene. We still have some people that were here for the graduation. A lot of people just shaking their heads, not really understanding what just unfolded. They said this was supposed to be a joyous day for these high school graduates. And then this happened the moment it ended. They said there was some type of second line for the graduates that was going on right outside just after the graduation. Everybody was having a good time. They heard what looked like or sounded like an argument that started it all. And then they say the gunfire went off and everybody just scared running, they said. Just a sad day for a lot of the folks out here, family members. I talked to one woman who traveled here to New Orleans for her nephew's graduation and said she just can't believe that this is how it ended.
Oh, I
that
can believe
will
it.
Be the memorable day for those graduates that a shooting unfolded just after they had finished graduating. That's the very latest out here. This investigation, once again, very much ongoing. If you know anything about this, you're urged to call Crime Stoppers.
And blah, 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 blah. Another day, another shooting. Although I got to tell you, this one doesn't qualify as a mass shooting because only 3 people were shot. I know there was at least 1 death. An elderly woman was fatally shot and 2 men wounded when an argument escalated into gunfire at in a Xavier University parking lot after a graduation ceremony for Morris Jeff High School in New Orleans. You know, another day in America. Aren't you proud? I'm proud to be an American where I know I can get shot. I mean, really. Wow. So this comes off of the weekend in which in Houston, the NRA had their annual convention. Now, you know, I guess some good comes out of bad things. And the good in this instance is the Good Liars. I never knew of this group, but check this out. So there's a couple of guys who go by the name the Good Liars. And well, here's a sample of what they did. So one of them was, I guess, you know, roaming around the convention hall asking some of the attendees questions. Like this woman had an interesting theory about what causes more deaths, a gun or a hammer?
More people and more crime is committed and more people are killed with hammers every year than guns.
Look at the facts.
I will look that up. I don't think that's true, actually.
That is true.
In the United States, though?
Yes, sir. That is true. Look it up. It's on. You can Google it. It's true. It's actually true.
So the number of murder victims and the weapons used. Okay, number one, handguns.
Handguns.
8,029. Hmm. Number two, firearms, type not stated.
Firearms.
4,863. Number three, knives or cutting instruments, personal weapons, fists, feet. Then rifles. At 455.
Right.
Then blunt objects.
Okay.
Clubs, hammers. 393.
Hammers.
So the 300, the hammers, that stat is just wrong.
Back to your question, Second Amendment is still my right and it's still important to me.
Okay. So it doesn't matter that this person had completely wrong, erroneous information. That doesn't matter. But I have my Second Amendment right. Yeah. By the way, whoever runs the NRA's Twitter account just tweeted out moments ago, I'm guessing, I just saw it moments ago. Oh, it was a couple of days ago, actually. Oh, shit. They tweeted this on the 27th of May. What day was the shooting? The shooting was on the 24th. That was last Tuesday, a week ago today. Well, on the 27th, on Friday, whoever controls the NRA's Twitter account tweeted out, in all caps, shall, period, not, period, be, period, infringed, period. And then they signed somebody's Twitter handle to it, Mark Robinson, NC, hashtag NRA convention. Well, you know, me being me, I had to respond, and I responded with, in all caps, A period, well period, regulated period, militia period, for fuck's sake. Oh, sorry, I wrote FFS. But if ever it deserved to be spelled out. Seriously. Although the guy who did that, who was asking that conventioneer the question about the hammers causing more deaths than guns. Yeah, right. Boy, there's one born every minute, isn't there? Well, later on, he got up and, I didn't watch any of the NRA convention on the television. I know you're shocked, just shocked to hear that. But on weekends, I want none of it. I tune out completely. But so let me tell you what this guy did. So he goes up to the microphone to, you know, take part in the public discourse. And he made a really good statement. I thought a very important statement. So I don't want to give it away. I just want you to enjoy it in the spirit in which it was presented. So again, this is the NRA annual gathering in Houston, Texas, this weekend. And what did this audience member want to say?
And so I have to say, thank you.
Okay, so he's about to step up to the microphone. There's a 1A for and a 1B again.
Gentlemen, at microphone 1A.
Thank you. My name is Jason Selvig, and I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida.
Oh, Floridian.
And I would like to say that I am sick and tired of the left-wing media, and frankly, people in this room today spreading misinformation about Wayne LaPierre.
Oh, really?
Whenever there's a mass shooting, they all say that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough to stop these mass shootings, and even implying that Wayne LaPierre has played a part in making it easier for these shooters to get guns, to get weapons.
Yeah.
You heard it after Las Vegas. You heard it after Pulse Nightclub in Orlando. You heard it after Columbine. You heard it after Parkland. You heard it after Virginia Tech. You heard it after Sandy Hook.
Yeah,
you heard
all
it
those.
After El
heard
Paso.
It.
You heard it after Buffalo.
All of that. Yep.
You kept hearing that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough.
Yeah.
And frankly, that's not true.
No?
The NRA, under Wayne LaPierre's leadership, has provided thoughts and prayers to the victims and their families.
That's true. Very true.
And maybe these mass shootings would stop happening if we all thought a little bit more.
Mm.
And we prayed
A little bit more.
So I'm asking everyone in this room to think.
Yeah. To think.
To pray.
To pray. Always.
Give your thoughts and your prayers.
Uh-huh.
And your thoughts and your prayers.
Mm.
And your prayers and your thoughts.
Mm.
And if we give enough of these thoughts and these prayers, these mass shootings will stop. So I want to thank you, Wayne LaPierre.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
For all your thoughts.
Thoughts and prayers.
And all your prayers.
Yes.
Thank you.
And the crowd gives him a healthy round of applause. I love somebody in the chat room. Wait, I got to find it. Is he actually trolling? Because his argument is absurd. Sydney? Trolling. Yes, he's trolling. Thoughts and prayers are about as helpful as this tape measure is against the bullets that flew at that New Orleans high school graduation today. Does that answer your question? Wow. Wow. So that happened. That's just awesome. So, you know, you listen to our members of Congress and that we're going to do something this time. We really are. We're going to do something this time. You know what they did? The Senate left for 2 weeks. The House left for a week. Yeah, that's our Congress, everybody. They know how to take those days off, don't they? Wow. Well, so that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. Although, you know, I got to say, to be honest here, the House Judiciary Committee, at least most of them, I would guess, are hanging around because they are meeting this week. Let's see if I can find this. The House Judiciary Committee will be holding an emergency hearing on Thursday to mark up a package of gun control bills. And it's the package is the Protecting Our Kids Act, and it includes eight gun-related bills in the package. And I'm telling you this because, frankly, it's the first action we've seen on gun control in as long as I can remember. So here are some of the provisions it includes. A bill to raise the purchasing age for semi-automatic weapons, rifles, as they call them, from 18 to 21. One that would ban the import, sale, manufacture, transfer, or possession of high-capacity ammunition magazines. But existing magazines are grandfathered in because, of course, they are. One that would require existing bump stocks to be registered under the National Firearms Act. Oh, and it bars the manufacture, sale, or possession of new bump stocks for civilian use. Okay. It amends the definition of ghost guns to require background checks on all sales. Okay. Let's see. It establishes new requirements for storing guns at home, especially homes with minors in the house, while providing tax credits for storage devices. All right. So it's all useful legislation, right? Now, the House Democratic leaders plan to bring these bills to the floor next week after the whole House returns. And they're confident that they have the votes to pass them. However, they're arguing now about whether they want to vote on each of these eight bills individually or as one package. Some want them to do it individually. See, they're going to go back and forth on this ad nauseum. And it's okay because next week the Senate is still off on recess, as they call it. So they're back the following week. And the thing is, any of this will be moot by the following week because the Senate will not, again, let me say Senate, will not come up with the 10 votes that the Democrats would need if all of them, all 50 of them, vote in favor of this legislation. It still would take 10 Republican votes to break the filibuster. And as you know by now, the filibuster is invoked every time a bill comes up for a vote. It used to be that they'd have to do a special in-depth thing to filibuster. You know, they'd have to hold the floor all night and or days and vote and talk. Well, now all they have to do is say, now we're filibustering. They don't even have to say it. It's just a given that they need 60 votes. So what's interesting is I look north, and in Florida, there's a lot to the north of us, but I'm talking the great white north. Canada! Oi, Canada! And Justin Trudeau. So here, the president went to this little town in Texas this weekend to meet with the families and I guess the first responders and whoever else he has to meet with and try to hold his act together. But in Canada, where they didn't have a shooting, wow, their prime minister jumped into action.
As a government, as a society, we have a responsibility to act to prevent more tragedies.
Yeah,
Canadians certainly don't need assault-style weapons that were designed to kill the largest number of people in the shortest amount of time. Gun violence is a complex problem, but at the end of the day, the math is really quite simple.
Yeah.
The fewer the guns in our communities, the safer everyone will be.
Wow. Wow. That sounds like common sense. The fewer the guns in our community, the safer everyone will be. So he's saying, okay, no more handgun sales, imports, anything. If you already have one, I guess you have it. But then there's atrophy and eventually they go away. Canada. Oh, this is interesting. Sydney says, someone said living in Canada is like living over a meth lab because Canada is above the U.S. And if you're wondering where Laffy is and where she's been the last couple of weeks, she's preparing for a month in Canada as they prepare to move there. So hopefully she'll be here and probably not next week, but maybe the following week before she leaves. And then hopefully she'll check in with us from Canada. So that's all going on. Isn't that fun? Yeah. Yeah. That's what I thought. Not really fun. Not really fun. But such as it is. Now I have no logical way to work in this next clip, except I just have to play it. I don't know when she said it or what she was talking about when she said it, but Marge Q Green, that would be Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, I guess, knows a few things about peaches because she lives in Georgia, right? But maybe someone else can explain this clip to me. So it's making the rounds. I guess she said it at some point this weekend, and we just need to hear what she said. Take it away, Marge.
You have to accept the fact that the government totally wants to provide surveillance on every part of your life.
Really?
They want to know when you're eating. They want to know if you're eating a cheeseburger, which is very bad because Bill Gates wants you to eat his fake meat that grows in a peach tree dish.
A what?
So you'll probably
get a little zap inside your body.
Don't eat a real cheeseburger. You need to eat the fake burger, the fake meat from Bill Gates.
First of all, what does Bill Gates have to do with your burger, fake or imagined? I don't know. But what's more compelling to me...
Government, shortest amount of time. Gun violence...
Wrong one again. Peach tree dish. Can someone explain for me the peach tree dish?
Bill Gates wants you to eat his fake meat that grows in a peach tree dish.
Marge, honey, it's petri, P-E-T-R-I. It's a special like gelatin-like substance in which bacteria or germs grow. What are you talking about? A peach tree dish. I'm still trying to figure it out. No. See, Bruce is in the chat room and says, it's contrived and planned. Green surely knows it's petri dish, not what she said. I don't think she does. I think she's just not, how do you say it? Very bright. Right, Marge? Are you very bright?
Gates. Why is Bill Gates running everything. Why does he get to decide that? You know, what? Bill Gates, I want to remind everyone, he wants to grow fake meat in a petri dish.
Oh,
and he wants us to
drink. Did she say it there? Did she say it right there? Hold on.
Meat in a petri dish.
That, you know what? It's hard to tell. I don't know if she said it correctly or not, but then she goes on to say.
And he wants us to drink poop water.
Really?
So I don't know why we're letting Bill Gates decide our health decisions. But here's the deal. Bill Gates is very concerned about monkeypox because this is something apparently he can make a lot of money off of, and him and his other buddies. But in the blue state of Massachusetts, someone has contracted monkeypox.
Oh, please. Okay, sorry. I won't keep doing that to you. I'm just sort of dumbfounded. No comment about the shootings over the state line in Chattanooga, Tennessee. You know what, Karina? I just can't keep up with them all. But let me tell you about this weekend, if I can open my notes here, because my computer's being a bit temperamental again. Let me, and I opened the wrong one. Oh, I hate it when I do this. Okay, so let me share this with you again, because... depending on what publication you're reading, there were a lot of shootings this weekend, right? So we came off of Buffalo, 10 dead, mostly older black people, because it was a guy who didn't like black people and went there specifically to shoot black people. And then there was this elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. Name of a town I never heard before. But it will be forever bored into my brain because of 19 murdered children and an incompetent police force who decided it was just a barricaded a hostage situation, no longer an active shooter, even though the kids from inside the classroom were calling 911 saying we're still alive. But that wasn't all. Let me read this to you. In just a 72-hour period span over Memorial Day weekend, there were more than 300 shooting incidents across the U.S., killing over 130 people. This according to data tabulated by the Gun Violence Archive. And if you ever want to get really depressed, look up the Gun Violence Archive. If you want to lose weight, great way to start a diet. Read that and then sit down and try to eat something. Recent shootings included deadly incidents of domestic violence, like the slaying of a mother and her three children under the age of 10 by her husband in central Michigan on Saturday. It also includes street violence, like that seen in the small Oklahoma town of Taft on Friday night, where roughly 1,500 people had gathered at an outdoor festival to enjoy meals from food trucks and celebrate the start of the long weekend. And shortly after midnight, shots rang out after a suspected argument, killing a 39-year-old woman and injuring seven others. I can keep going. There were at least 12 mass shootings across the United States over the three-day Memorial Day weekend, according to the Washington Post. But wait, after this report came out, there were two others. One said no, there were 14, and another one said there were 17. So it's really hard to keep track. The shootings, defined as events with four or more victims shot or killed, left at least 8 dead and 55 injured in Colorado Springs, Colorado, Fresno, California, Malabar, Florida, Chicago, Taft, Oklahoma, and elsewhere, according to the Post. Keep going? I could keep going all day long because this is what happens here in the United States. Hi, David.
Hi. I believe Bill Gates is an investor in either Impossible Burger or Beyond.
Well, that should explain it. And you know, we're not big fans of the Impossible meats because, you know, but we do love the Beyond meats. But frankly, I'm not eating any of it because I am doing a whole food, plant-based diet. And you maybe can't tell, but in the course of the last couple of months, I've dropped 20 pounds and I'm less inflamed, they tell me. So anyway, I'm not eating any of the Beyond beef. So take that, Marge. All right. So I do have an interview today. So let's get off the gun thing, but we're not quite off the gun thing yet. I was pitched, you know, I get pitched a lot of authors because I think I do a pretty good interview, right? So I was pitched this new book by Admiral James Stavridis. Now, we've all seen him on the MSNBCs because he's their military person. Yes, David?
Also, the wall between our bedrooms doesn't vibrate as much since you've been on the diet.
Thank you. I'm not snoring as much.
There's no one in your bedroom using a leaf blower.
Ah, good to know. Thank you. All right. You just had to put that in there, right? Okay, so back to my interview. So Admiral James Stavridis, who was a four-star admiral in the U.S. Navy, he was also Supreme Commander of NATO. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not a big military fan, but I think I need to interview this guy. And so we did. He's just doing interviews today. He did a junket day. So throughout the day, everyone gets their allotted time. And I had a half hour with him at about 12:45 this afternoon. And I taped it. And we're going to play it in just a few minutes. But before I play that for you, I want to tell you, I did ask the tough questions that I wanted to ask him. And there was one point where I thought, oh, shoot, I really pissed him off. He's not happy with me. But then when the interview ended, he shocked the hell out of me because I'm thinking, okay, so it was all well and good until I got to that question. And then he gave me a hard time because I mistakenly called him General a couple of times instead of Admiral. But, you know, I usually turn off the recorder as soon as we're done. But the minute we ended, he launched into another question for me. And I want, just because I need to pat myself on the back every once in a while, I want to play for you the minute or so after the interview ended. Because he liked it. Mikey, he really liked it. So check this out. So we wrapped up the interview. We said thank you. And then he asked me.
Bye-bye. Nicole, are you Greek American by any chance?
No, I'm not. I'm actually okay. A Jewish with Russian and Romanian ancestry. By the way,
no, you're just your wonderful, engaging persona struck me as part of my Greek American.
Oh
world.
Wow! Well, thank you so much.
Remind me of another Nicole I know, Nicole Wallace.
Well, that's a high compliment. Thank you.
She's Greek American, by the way.
Is she funny? Yep. I got to ask you. You're from Florida. I'm in Florida. Crazy place to be right now. What part of Florida are you from?
I'm in Ponte Vedra Beach, which is up in the northeast, upper right-hand corner, Jacksonville.
I see.
How about you?
I'm in Coral Springs. I'm in South Florida, next to Parkland. So this week has brought up a lot of painful memories. It's tough down here. Well, Admiral, thank you so much. I'm sorry for the misidentification, and I really appreciate your time.
It just happens all the time.
I'll bet.
It's a very common common misspeaking. But thank you for your very straightforward questions. I think those are all good questions, and I hope you appreciate the honesty in my answers.
I definitely do. Thank you so much. Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. So I saved that because I thought, wow, first of all, that's high praise. Nicole Wallace, despite the fact that she is a Republican or former Republican, she's actually very good at what she does. So that was a high compliment. And as much as it sounds like he's perturbed with me as we get further into the interview, apparently he wasn't. He liked it. Mikey, he liked it. So with that said, let's hear it, shall we? Take it away. Magic of videotape. Here we go. I'm thrilled to welcome our next guest to the show. He is a retired four-star U.S. Navy Admiral, James Stavridis. He's also a former Supreme Commander of NATO, which I've got a lot to ask about all that. But Admiral Stavridis, welcome to the show and congratulations on the new book. It's called To Risk It All, Nine Conflicts and the Crucible of Decision. This is your 10th book?
It's actually my 12th book, Nicole.
Oh, okay. Well, I read something wrong. 12th book. So it's keeping you busy. And this one is interesting because it is about conflict resolution or how to make tough decisions under fire, more accurately. Yes?
Indeed it is. It's a book about making decisions, hard decisions, critical decisions under extreme stress, both of time and of circumstance. And I think that's something, sadly, that all of us will find ourselves in, whether it's in an active shooter situation or an automobile accident or a doctor in an operating room or military or police. There are lessons you can draw from the stories of others that will help prepare you for that moment.
And in fact, we're experiencing one of those right now on a national level. The commander in charge in the town of Uvalde, Texas, where at the Robb Elementary School, apparently he's the commander of the school police. So he had, what, five or six people under him. Is that the person who should be making the decision on an active shooter incident when kids are in a classroom with a shooter?
First and foremost, all of us, our hearts go out to those children, obviously, but those parents, as parent myself, I can't imagine how that rends your heart. Secondly, we're going to learn more. And this is why it is a very smart move to have the U.S. Justice Department come in and tear that thing apart, because we need to understand minute by minute, as painful as it's going to be, when that 9/11 call came in from a 10-year-old, what was the time lag? Could something have occurred differently? And third and finally, I'll give you a snapshot and back to the book to risk it all. If you want to be a police officer and you are faced with a situation like this, you have to be willing to risk it all. Now, now, now. I reserve judgment. I want to be fair to the officers on the scene. But a fundamental part of your heart as a police officer has to be the protection of others, particularly of children.
Without a doubt, and I understand reserving judgment. Look, you even write in the book that when there's a major event, something like this, the earliest reports are often not right. Everything gets changed as the story gets as there's more information to come out. So the earliest reports are often discounted. So there's a lot we certainly don't know. The thing that stuck out to me was, you know, the commander of the school police force is probably not the right person to be making this call. And after over an hour, it should maybe someone else have stepped in and said, wait a minute, this is the wrong way to do this.
That's certainly my every instinct. And once we have all of that in play, we'll not only be able to afford accountability where required, but also, more importantly, I think, to learn the lessons that can be applied publicly. Let me take you to a different potential mass shooting.
Okay.
3 weeks ago in Laguna Woods, California, a church is assaulted by a single gunman who locks down all the entrances and exits and is walking into this church with a handgun out, and a doctor, Dr. John Cheng, turns, sees the risk to the congregation, and attacks the gunman. He's shot, and tragically, he dies. He's right. A physician himself, by the way, 52 years old, two children. He chose at that moment to risk it all. He knocked the gunman down, and therefore the other congregants were then able to swarm him and subdue him. It's an amazing story of a civilian, a doctor, who knew at that moment he had to risk it all. And by the way, his mother in her 80s was in that congregation.
Oh, wow.
Pretty remarkable moment. And I think that the more we think about scenarios like this, the more we prepare, the more we look at others who have been heroic or others who have failed, the better prepared we will be if and when we meet the moment where we must risk it all.
Well, let me ask you about another recent situation, though it didn't involve an active shooter. It was our withdrawal from Afghanistan. Some would look back on that. They say hindsight is often 20/20, not so much when you're in the moment. Was this a failure because it was not better planned, or they didn't account for all the eventualities, should there be some reversal of course midstream when they see how badly it's going?
Boy, that's a smart comment. And one of the principles in the book, To Risk It All, is have the ability to change your mind. You go into a scenario and you have a certain set of assumptions, but when they start to falsely fall away, you have to be able to change your mind. And the Afghan withdrawal is a pretty good example of a scenario in which we had a lot of assumptions, right? Starting with the Afghan military that we had built would be able to withstand the Taliban for a significant period of time, and therefore we could have an orderly withdrawal. Pretty soon, those Afghan forces were falling. Our leadership, our allied leadership, the Afghans themselves should have recognized the capability of the Taliban. We should have changed our assumptions earlier in that process. And I think that will be studied by military leaders as an example of where we failed to execute a timely, methodical withdrawal. And part of our failure was we were unwilling to change our minds, unwilling to change the assumptions in the moment.
Interesting. So, General Stavridis, we're looking at a real-time situation, of course, a war
said General.
Happening.
Admiral.
It's a war I never thought we'd see again in my lifetime. It's ground forces, what's happening in Ukraine at the hands of Russia. This is something that I think everybody who thought about it thought, as Putin did, that it would end within days. Putin thought 48 hours will be in and it's over. But you had this president, Zelensky, who said, I don't need a ride, I need ammunition. And here we are now, it's more than 3 months later, and many experts are saying Putin needs to find a way out. Do you think that that's the way it's going to go, or are they going to keep fighting forever?
Let's start with Zelensky, because he is one of these heroic figures who emerges in a very unexpected way. He's a former comedian, a performer, political actor later in life. Putin is certain that he can slap Zelensky around. Putin finds out that isn't working. That's when Putin comes up with this idea of invading the country and decapitating the Zelensky government. That's failed. So your question, now we're in a reset position with the Russian forces locked into a much smaller zone of combat, which is to their advantage. It gives them better ability to conduct logistics, better intelligence, less area they're trying to fight in. So at this point, Putin, I think, is looking for a way to consolidate control over that southeast of Ukraine, and then he's going to want to go to the negotiating table and codify that control. Zelensky, on the other hand, is saying, you know what? We beat you in Kyiv. We beat you in Kharkiv. We beat you in central Ukraine. No, we're not going to negotiate. So could this really drag on? Potentially it could. I'll close with this, Nicole. I think that both sides ultimately are going to have a motivation to get to a negotiation. Putin, because he is going to come under very tough sanctions. They're already starting to kick in. His burn rate, both in people getting killed in action and his finances, is rising. Popular support, you can feel it just starting to wobble a little bit. Mm-hmm. He'll want to get to the negotiating table. And Zelensky, he hates the idea of giving up even an inch of Ukraine.
Right.
But he's got a big country, 85% of it not occupied by Russia, that's just being pounded. He would like to get this to a stop so he can rebuild that part, the rest, the 85% of Ukraine. Ultimately, I think you'll see them come to a negotiation. If you want a model for how this ends, it's probably the Korean War, where both sides kind of beat each other into almost a state of exhaustion. You declare an armistice line, the 49th parallel across the peninsula of Korea, and we're parked there 80 years later. Wow. I could see this being a long-term frozen conflict along those lines.
Wow. Now, you have an opinion piece up at Bloomberg that you posted this weekend, how to break Russia's blockade of Ukraine's Black Sea ports. That's the strategic area that Putin wants, isn't it? He wants the ports so that he controls, you know, trade in the region. So do you think that's the way to go? And further, just to expand on that question, you were Supreme Commander of NATO. Why isn't, and I guess I should make this a separate question, why isn't Ukraine a NATO member and should they be?
Yeah, two different questions. I'll take the first one first and point out that what Putin is trying to do is choke the economy of Ukraine. Mm. And that's bad for Ukraine, but it's terrible for the rest of the world because Ukraine exports a significant amount of the wheat, the sunflower oil, the potash, fertilizer, agrarian products, a significant number of them come from Ukraine. So by choking off the Ukrainian economy, Putin is going to create food shortages and unrest, notably in North Africa and the Middle East. So we, the West, have a twofold reason to break that blockade. Number one, it'll help our Ukrainian friends and partners. And number two, it'll avoid famine and food shortages in a significant part of the world. So, yes, I think we should conduct convoy operations. What I mean by that, Nicole, is you take those grain ships, empty ships come in, they load up grain, they take it out, they're escorted by a NATO or a U.S. or a U.N.-flagged warship, and you say to Russia, don't attack. You're mm-hmm. buying a much bigger war if you do that. Is that risky? You know, back to the book, to risk it all? I don't think that's risking it all, but it is. It can be very risky. It'll be a risky operation. We've done it before. In the 1980s, we did exactly that with oil tankers coming in and out of the Arabian Gulf. So I think it's a sensible, good idea. Your second question, should Ukraine be a NATO member? I may surprise you here, but I don't think so. And they have applied for membership on multiple occasions. They've been given kind of a pathway to membership. Typically, the assessment has been, and I think an accurate one, they're not quite ready. They didn't quite meet the standards of NATO. There are concerns about their military capability, about their concerns about corruption in Ukraine itself. And by the time they formally put an application in, Putin had already invaded. So for NATO to make them a member kind of automatically puts NATO into a conflict with Russia. So for all those reasons, they were sort of put in the category of close friend, partner, but not a formal ally. I think that's where this is going to stay for the time being.
Why is, and maybe you're the wrong person to ask because you were the NATO Supreme Commander, but why, for those of us who are, you know, naive about the subject, what is the risk? Why, what is the purpose of NATO? Just to get down to basics.
Sure. The purpose of NATO is to protect the NATO members and to create an alliance so that an attack on one is the same as an attack on all, guaranteeing that of the currently 30 members of NATO, they stand together. And the big advantage of that, Nicole, is capability. The United States has a defense budget of around $700 billion. The rest of NATO has a defense budget of $300 billion. Right. It's the second largest defense budget in the world. It is a larger defense budget than China and Russia combined. So it's a huge alliance, 3 million troops under arms, 800 ocean-going warships, 15,000 combat aircraft. It's a very powerful and capable alliance. It exists to protect democracies in North America, U.S. and Canada, and Europe. That does not mean that everyone who would like to join NATO can join NATO. And so the alliance has to very carefully tend the garden of who gets into NATO. But I'll close with a point that I'm sure you're well aware of, which is that Sweden and Finland mm-hmm. have now applied for membership. Here, I think there is a very strong case for membership because they are highly competent. They are not corrupt in any sense. They have deployed repeatedly alongside NATO. I commanded both Finnish and Swedish troops in combat. They're utterly professional. Bringing those two nations in creates a northern flank. That is a problem for Vladimir Putin, gives us a window into the Arctic. These are two very strong, capable democracies. I think you'll see them in NATO by the fall. That'll bring the alliance to 32 nations. In the future, there'll be other opportunities to look at other nations, perhaps including Ukraine.
But if Ukraine, when the Soviet Union broke up, Ukraine gave up their nukes, right? And so, I mean, and they're beating back Putin's Russian army. I mean, doesn't that say something about their aptitude for defense?
It does. And I think they have strengthened the case for them to ultimately join NATO. And you're right to raise that issue of them giving up their nukes because their security was guaranteed by the United States,
right?
Great Britain, and Russia. And Putin has yet again lied and violated a premise that he should have stood up for. So, yeah, your point is well taken. And I think President Zelensky has made the same point. To those who doubt whether we should be in NATO, take a look at how our troops are doing. It's a pretty powerful argument.
Right. And I'll tell you just one last thing on the subject of Ukraine and Russia. I am a peace advocate. I've never been a cheerleader for war. I think it's a barbaric practice. And I think if women ruled the world, we'd have a lot less war. I hate the idea of people killing each other. When I see what's going on in Ukraine, it literally makes me sick. That said, it blows my mind that one madman, and I'll say he's a madman, is able to murder millions of Ukrainians, of people in any nation, and the world doesn't stop him. And I'm told it's because we're afraid if we step in militarily, he might use nukes. Well, does it really have anything to do with what we do? He's going to use nukes if he's in a corner and thinks that it's his only way out. Do you understand my frustration here?
Of course, Nicole. And I think it would be a very different set of events if Putin didn't have nuclear weapons. He's got 5,000 nuclear weapons. Now, personally, I don't believe he's going to reach for the lever to the apocalypse and launch nuclear weapons. He knows that's ultimately a losing game for all of us if he goes high end. And even if he uses simply tactical nuclear weapons, the opprobrium of the world will fall upon Russia in ways that make what's happening so far look like a gentle push. So I think it's unlikely he goes to nuclear weapons. And therefore, and I think this is your point, we should be taking more risk in how we confront him. And I think that that's why I am advocating for this idea of breaking the Russian blockade. I think it's time to do that. Particularly, these are international waters. I think a secondary consideration here over time might be the use of a no-fly zone over Ukraine would be another option to consider. And so, bottom line, the administration is trying to kind of steer a course between doing something that does put Putin in such a corner that he reaches for the nuclear option. On the other end of the spectrum is, oh, we're scared of our shadow. We won't do anything.
Right.
I think you have to kind of keep the ship in the middle of the fairway. Right now, I'm one to say, let's take more risks. We've got to confront Putin. He's not backing down.
I hear you. And I hate to say it, but I kind of agree with you. We're speaking with Admiral James Stavridis. He is a retired 4-star U.S. Navy admiral, former Supreme Commander of NATO. And here's the sticky part that I need to get into, because you're the military analyst for NBC News and MSNBC. I've seen you a million times. I've heard them describe you in ways that I have. They'll mention your book. The new book is To Risk It All, 9 Conflicts in the Crucible of Decision. You've done this a dozen times. But what I don't hear them say is that you are the vice chair for global affairs for the Carlyle Group. Mm-hmm. You're the chairman of the board of counselors. That's the, you advise military contractors for McLarty Associates, and you're a chair of the board of the Rockefeller Foundation. The other interests that you may represent, there's a very famous line that we have all heard from one of our former presidents.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
With the Carlyle Group, you're like second in command of global affairs, basically overseeing a multi-billion dollar portfolio of defense companies. Is there a conflict of interest here, or should we at least be made aware of the fact that you do sit on this board and you control billions of dollars of investment into the defense industry?
Well, first and foremost, my job at the Carlyle Group is vice chairman global affairs, but I do not, I'm not involved in the investment side. I do advising. The title would imply that, but my job is to politics, what's happening in the world. I do not do investments. I don't direct funds. McLarty, I'm no longer affiliated with them. Okay. Same thing. I'm an advisor at McLarty, chairman of the board of the Rockefeller.
This is weird because we get on this subject and all of a sudden your audio and video freeze. I think I've lost connection with you. And that's something for the tinfoil hat crew
in international relations. I think my bona fides to comment upon and talk about the world are significant. And so I am perfectly content doing the kind of public commentary that I do, but I'm not affiliated in a investment sense. And if I were, all of those disclosures are made by the network in any event. So it's not like I'm doing something in secret in order to create a different set of facts in the world.
Right. A couple of things that one you're not aware of is as soon as we started talking about this, our internet connection froze. Now, I know this is like tinfoil hat territory, but it's weird because we had no problem up until I brought up this subject and then our connection goes out and you froze. I kid you not. You can see it on the video. This, and I'm not bringing this up just for you. This is an issue that's been an issue since the Iraq War, since, you know, the early 2000s, when all networks would do this, bring on military retired brass without identifying where they work. And just so you know, I'm looking at the press release from this Carlyle Group from June of 2018, and it says 30-year military leader, educator, and author to advise executive suite and investment teams on range of strategic and investment issues. So I didn't, you know, I'm not the one who said you're advising the investment strategy. They did.
I'm not directing purchases or funds. I'm giving geopolitical advice, Nicole, exactly the same way I'm sitting for this interview and giving you my thoughts. And by the way, I am always identified as an admiral and a former Supreme Allied Commander. So I think
always
listeners who are sensible will take that into account and form their own judgments about my views. And so I don't think I'm hiding anything. I think I've disclosed everything, and I am perfectly content that I am not doing anything that is inappropriate.
And that's you. And I have no reason to distrust you. I've seen you on television for many years. You're a comforting force when talking about these things. But I don't know that I feel that way about everybody who goes on every network, because there are some more nefarious intents out there. Do you think that it would be a good practice for any network, be it Fox or NBC, to disclose former military and what their roles are with any major investment group that may be investing in the military industrial complex?
I think disclosure is important and conducted assiduously by the networks. No one, to my knowledge, is hiding anything. The fact that everything you've just said is in the public domain is proof of that. And if where this is going is that, oh, once you've served at a senior level in the military, you shouldn't be on television, you shouldn't comment, you shouldn't write articles, you shouldn't write books, because supposedly you have this biased view, I think that's nonsense. And I think it would be equally nonsensical to say to CNBC, our business network, oh, you can't have on former CEOs because they were in C-suites, or you can't have, in the case of the pandemic, you can't have doctors come on because they have a certain set opinion. I think the key is disclosure. I think the disclosures have been made, will continue to be made, and I'm quite content with my own participation in the process.
Gotcha. And I appreciate your answer. And that was the question, really. It's not about whether or not you all should be able to comment. It's about whether the disclosures should be made, that this is what this person is doing now, and therefore take their, you know, advice or what, you know, how much money we should be spending on this weapon system with a grain of salt, depending on what their other work is. General Admiral Stavridis,
yeah,
thank you so much.
You've called me General twice.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I'm an admiral.
Admiral Stavridis, I'm so sorry. That is a mistake on my part. I'll try to go back in and edit that if I can. Admiral, because you're with the Navy, it's a different thing. I'm just so not connected to the military. Before I let you go, and we've got like 3 minutes left, I do want to ask you about the story. The book is filled with 9 different examples of military commanders who have done what they needed to do to make a right decision in the middle of a moment of stress. Can you tell us about Dory Miller real quickly and the story of Dory Miller and what she did that we need to know about her for?
Well, Dory Miller is a man.
Doris?
Yep.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yep. He was a big man, about 6'4", 225 pounds, African-American, grows up in Texas. His parents named him Doris, kind of a family name. Uh-huh. And he said, that's how I became a boxer, when people would see the name Doris and think that he wasn't someone who would be a fighter. He comes out of Texas. He joins the military. In those days, tragically, the U.S. Navy is segregated. It's racist. His job becomes a cook and working for the officers on the battleship West Virginia. Pearl Harbor comes, and Dory Miller runs for the guns. He's not formally trained in how to use an anti-aircraft gun, but heroically, he takes on one of these guns. He shoots down a couple of Japanese planes that are attacking. It's a moment of extreme courage. He becomes the first African-American to be a recipient of the Navy Cross, the second highest decoration of the U.S. Navy. Tragically, 2 years later, he's on a different ship. That ship is torpedoed by a Japanese submarine, and Dory Miller is lost at sea. But here's what we ought to hold in our minds, 2 things. One is that the Navy just over 18 months ago announced that the next nuclear aircraft carrier, our 100,000-ton carriers, will be named the USS Doris Miller.
Wow.
Second thing we ought to know is personal courage. And that's where we started this conversation, Nicole, talking about when you hit that moment, mm-hmm. be it in an active shooter situation, in a military operation, in an operating room, at the hospital bed of a loved one, and you have to make a decision that requires real courage under the compression of time, the best thing you can do to be ready for that is to read and think and study and ask yourself, what would I do if the moment came where I had to risk it all?
Admiral Stavridis, thank you so much. The book is available now, To Risk It All. Thank you for your time, and thank you for taking my questions with such grace. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Nicole. I enjoyed it. All the best.
You too. There you go. My interview with Admiral James Stavridis. Yes. And he seemed to be a bit perturbed, and understandably so. Oops, hold on. I got to give you my audio. Here, I'm back. Sorry about that. He seemed to be a little perturbed about the Admiral General thing, and I understand. I guess I didn't anger him too much because he did pay me that very nice compliment after we finished the interview. So we're okay, I guess. With that, yes, to answer the question from the chat room, I am in for Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen tonight on the broadcast. Tonight, what we're going to do is re-air the interview I did with Kelly Carlin and my guest from Friday, who was the political director of a progressive veterans group called Common Defense. They're at commondefense.us. I thought one last thing for Memorial Day before we put a fork in it. All right. So I got to run. Gonna go. I'll leave you with the news. I will leave you with the news today. But then I'm out of here so I can go do the broadcast. Tomorrow, by the way, Marcy Wheeler and Digby. So a busy, busy day tomorrow. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. I will. I'll talk to you then. Yes. Thank you for being here. Truly appreciate it. All right. Now, the news.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Justice Department announced on Sunday that it would review the police response to the shooting in Uvalde, Texas. Local law enforcement officials faced harsh criticism for holding off on confronting the gunman for more than an hour. The attacker was finally killed by a tactical unit of border control agents. So we know that as many as 19 local and federal officers were in the hallway during much of the shooting. Sources say officers were present outside the classroom by 11:35 a.m., but the suspect wasn't killed until 12:50 p.m. when a tactical Border Patrol unit breached the first room. During the 75 minutes in between, reports suggest that officers were told not to engage. This despite multiple calls from students to 911 from inside the classroom during that time. Local police have also faced scrutiny following videos posted to social media showing frantic parents being restrained by police outside the school. President Biden on Sunday met with relatives of the 19 children and two teachers killed in the shooting. Biden and First Lady Jill placed flowers in a memorial outside the school. They walked past a row of large photos of the victims, stopping to touch some of them. They then attended Mass at a local church. But as the Bidens left, a man shouted, "Do something!" Biden responded by saying, "We will." Well, when? You see, the House is out for the week. The Senate is on recess for 2 weeks, but Canada showed they can act quickly. Canada's Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, said the country will dramatically tighten access to guns after a series of deadly mass shootings in the U.S. The decision isn't a full ban, but Trudeau said it effectively caps the market for handguns in Canada as he halted any new sales, imports, or transfers of those weapons.
As a government, as a society, we have a responsibility to act to prevent more tragedies. Canadians certainly don't need assault-style weapons that were designed to kill the largest number of people in the shortest amount of time. Gun violence is a complex problem, but at the end of the day, the math is really quite simple. The fewer the guns in our communities, the safer everyone will be.
Meanwhile, here, things continue. In just the 72 hours over Memorial Day weekend, there were more than 300 shooting incidents across the country, killing over 130 people. This, according to data tabulated by the Gun Violence Archives. There were at least 12 mass shootings, with at least 10 deaths and 61 injuries. The Washington Post reporting Monday that these mass shootings, which are defined as events with four or more victims shot or killed, occurred in Colorado Springs, Fresno, California, Malabar, Florida, Chicago, Taft, Oklahoma. I could keep going, but you get the idea. President Biden, returning to the White House, repeated his call for tougher gun control laws, saying banning assault-style weapons like the one the attacker used in Texas would be a rational place to start. So, all right, I complained that the House is on recess for the week, but the House Judiciary Committee will be holding an emergency hearing on Thursday to mark up a package of 8 gun-related bills, which Democrats are calling the Protecting Our Kids Act. So these 8 bills include legislation to raise the purchasing age for semi-automatic rifles from 18 to 21, ban the import, sale, manufacture, transfer, or possession of high-capacity ammunition magazines, although existing magazines would be grandfathered in. They require existing bump stocks to be registered under the National Firearms Act and bars the manufacture, sale, or possession of new bump stocks for civilian use. It amends the definition of ghost guns to require background checks on all sales, as ATF is trying to do through rulemaking. It strengthens criminal penalties for gun trafficking and straw purchases and establishes new requirements for storing guns at home, especially in homes with minors present, while providing tax credits for storage devices. House Democratic leaders plan to bring these bills to the floor early next week and are confident they have the votes to pass them, but there are a lot of hurdles to climb. And then there's the Senate, where the package does not have the 60 votes it would need to advance. So, Nancy Pelosi, Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, Majority Whip Jim Clyburn, and Assistant Speaker Catherine Clark held a call on Thursday to discuss how to respond. Sadly, gun violence isn't the only problem plaguing the country. In an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, President Biden lays out his plan for fighting inflation. White House officials saying there will be a heavy focus on inflation and gun violence throughout June. Biden's op-ed lays out a 3-point program for dealing with inflation, but it relies on congressional action for most of it. And so far, that's not happening. Biden writing, quote, "My predecessor demeaned the Fed, and past presidents have sought to influence its decisions inappropriately during periods of elevated inflation. I won't do this. I've appointed highly qualified people from both parties to lead that institution. I agree with their assessment that fighting inflation is our top economic challenge right now." Biden says Congress can help further by passing clean energy tax credits and investments that he's proposed. Meanwhile, on the other side of the world, Russian and Ukrainian forces continue fighting in cities across eastern Ukraine. President Zelensky made his first trip to visit the troops on the front lines in Kharkiv. And finally, the National Rifle Association announced on Monday that its board of directors voted 54-1 to reelect scandal-plagued Wayne LaPierre as its CEO and executive vice president. The vote came during the NRA's annual meeting as LaPierre faced a challenge from former Congressman Alan West. In case you were wondering, West got just one vote. It was probably his own. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com. And please click on that donate button.